Roy Clark is coming up right now. It's a good interview. We've broken it in two parts. You'll get the point as to why it's been broken in half, and we'll play the second part. You're going to like this. It's about another 20-minute segment, which it takes us right up through some things I bet you did not know about. Well, let's move on to Hee Haw. Now, this to me, I still think there are going to be people who will gasp. When I ask you to tell me and answer this question, I still think there are people who are going to gasp. I want you to tell me, Roy, how long was Hee Haw on CBS?
On CBS?
Yes, sir.
2.5 years.
2.5 years. Now, the whole world has to gasp every time they think about that because we all know it went on forever and ever and ever. Now, when Hee Haw was taken off of CBS, it wasn't because of ratings.
The ratings, it was, they moved it around trying to get it lost. CBS did, trying to find where people would lose track of it, and they could say, see, they have no audience. Well, they couldn't do it.
No, they could not.
Every time they moved it, the audience went with them.
We all found you.
And we found it right off.
We went.
And these numbers may be a little off, but we went into, they called and said, don't worry about it, when they announced that CBS was going to drop it. Don't worry about it, we're going into syndication. And we've already doubled our viewing, because now the stations that wanted to carry it, but couldn't because of the network, now they were free. And so we picked up, it went from like 180 network stations, CBS, up to like 265 syndicated.
And lasted for decades.
I think I was in production for 28 years.
My gosh. That's an amazing, you know, how many shows last that long period? Almost none. How many last that long when a major network says, your ratings are fine, but we just don't want you right now? My goodness.
Yeah, they weren't ready for what happened. The deal was, that was the year that the Smothers Brothers and CBS had a falling out.
That's right. Oh, that's right, yeah.
Well, that left a summer replacement for whoever was going to take over that summer, what they call the summer, mercy.
Well,
anyway, we went in and did 13 shows, which made up for the summer.
Mm-hmm.
But here come the fall schedule, and they had this time spot, but no one to play it. So that's when they come back and said to our producers, do you think you can do 13 shows? He said, of course we can do it. He hung up the phone and said, can we do 13 shows? And so we did. We never stopped. We went right from there, just bigger than ever.
Oh, absolutely. And so many great, so much great music. Let me ask you this. Was it as much fun doing as it appeared to be? I mean, did you enjoy it? I mean, there was work involved, but did you enjoy doing that show?
Oh, is it funny? As funny as it was?
Yeah. Yes.
You can't believe it, Steve, that we went in not really knowing who was going to be on the show.
Oh.
We made our first entrance.
Okay.
We walked into a studio in Nashville, and they handed out some slips and say, when the camera comes on, say this. And we looked at one another, really, and we did an interview with one of the stations that was, you know, just started carrying it. And they said, well, when you heard it the first time, did you think it was going to be a hit? And I said, I'm sorry, I cannot. I don't try to predict things, but there's no way that I could foresee this being the monster show that it turned out to be. And I was surprised when Buck said, I knew it was going to be a hit from day one.
Really?
And I never got to ask him what he was, why he was thinking it would happen that way. But it never came up again that I recall. But we went in and we did 13 shows in June, 13 shows in October. Well, the rest of the time we were out on the road doing concerts. And So by the time that we were, and we had long days of taping. And like sometimes the sun wasn't even up when we'd start, and we'd work late into the night. So we were pretty tired when it was over to go out and do a concert.
And then perform.
Like release.
Yeah, oh yeah, sure. Okay. Okay. So many great musicians, so many great, like you did some comedy along with the other people, but so many great, I used to watch the banjos when, and it was, these were the people when it was just the banjo players out there.
Yeah.
It was you. It was, Ronnie Stoneman from the Stoneman family, who's just a wonderful, wonderful bit of history and talent there. Bobby Thompson, by the way. All the banjo players knew who Bobby was, back with a hat behind everybody.
I was just going to say, don't forget Bobby.
Oh, gosh, no. Grandpa Jones, Stringbean. Who am I leaving out of the banjo bunch that was there? And Buck Trent. Buck Trent was off.
Yeah, sure.
Oh, man, what? Now, let me ask you this. Now, you're very accomplished and very celebrated by the time you're doing this, but when you're playing with a group, let's just talk about that banjo group that we're talking about. When you would be playing with them, were you ever looking around thinking, wow?
Constantly.
Yeah, wow.
You know, that's what I told Bobby Thompson. I said, get up close to the mic because you're carrying everything I do.
He almost reinvented the style. I mean, he was so good at everything that he played, guitar and banjo, that just having him around. Then you look over and you see all the history in Stringbean and Grandpa, who was still Grandpa Jones, and then and Buck Trent. And I, by the way, I have albums that you and Buck did that I cherish to this day, because I needed to find good banjo stuff, and the Pair of Fives to me is one that I just flat wore the grooves out on.
Yeah, what kept me alive on stage is that album. It was very successful.
Oh, it was great.
And it and Buck is so unique in his own style of playing that I just find a soft spot in between.
Now you're
Bobby Thompson on one side, Buck Trent on the other.
You're underselling yourself, my friend, but that's okay. That's a nice way to be. Gosh, I was thinking back. I had Ronnie Stoneman on this program. I think it might have been.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. It might have been more. It was more than a year ago. And talk about a story, a life story, and what she's been through and what Hee-Haw meant to her. And, of course, through it all of a sudden in the middle of the interview, she's being the ironing board lady. She starts doing bits from her Hee-Haw days with that voice. Oh, man, I was rolling on the floor laughing. It was just a real hoot to have her be there and just be so full of energy. And then when you start piecing together, for me, the whole family band, I knew of the Stoneman family band, but I had to really go back and make sure that I understood it. And my goodness, what a bunch of music came out of that family.
I grew up around the Stonemans.
Did you really?
Yeah, I know. In fact, I know when Ronnie was just, maybe a toddler, but most of her adult life. And I knew all her brothers and sisters and her father, Pop Stoneman.
Yeah.
And her mother, who was a fiddle player. But she more or less pulled back and let the others have it. It's too much of a chore.
I just read, and I should.
Stoneman.
I shouldn't say this because.
You know, they had what? 21 living children?
There's a bunch of them. Yep. There was a bunch of them. I just read the other day they're going to release, and I can't remember the name of the recording, so I shouldn't have done this. You know, they did, the Stoneman family did that big recording. It's just now being re-released. I think it was unavailable for so long. It really was like a groundbreaking recording. Roy, I can't remember it, so I shouldn't have mentioned it, but I just saw the other day it's going to be released. And Ronnie told me the name of it, and I'm drawing a blank, but... You know, the stuff that family did and brought the music together and the different little events that they had just was remarkable. So.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, her dad, I've got a couple of cylinder records that he wrote and recorded the sinking of the Titanic.
Really?
Yeah, I think it came out in like 1912 or something very, very old.
Wow.
But he was one of the founders of what we listen to today.
Exactly. That's right. Yeah, I mean, the Stonemans and the Carter family, maybe. I mean, maybe you know, equal in elevation as far as what they did for country music as a whole. And maybe one more publicized than the other, I don't know. But, I mean, I was just amazed by that group on stage with you. And then the gospel quartet I wanted to talk to you a little bit about. You participated in that.
Right.
Yeah. Who was singing it? And why did you do that? I get, you know, the bluegrass part makes perfect sense. But explain to people why, Roy, when bluegrass music is played, there's almost always, on almost every album, there's always gospel music. And at some point there will be an a cappella thing. What's the connection there that you remember?
Well, I can see us now. Grandpa Jones and myself were walking. We had just finished doing something, and they had broken reset the stage. And Grandpa was very, very careful about what he and where he said things. So he said, "Roy, let me ask you something. Don't you think we ought to be doing a gospel show?" He said, "Every show I've ever done always had a gospel show or a gospel tune in it." He said, "Why don't you go ask Mr. Lavello?" I said, "I'll do it." And I went right into our producers. Back then we was using, not motorhomes, but like makeshift offices for the crew.
Sure.
And I went in and knew that Sam would be there, and I told him about that. And he said, "Well, I don't know. We've got a lot of stuff going on." And I said, "Well, I think you would do yourself proud if you would consider doing a gospel play." So Grandpa set it up.
Okay.
We had Kenny. I got a metal block now.
Did you have this baritone scraping the bottom of the floors named Kenny Price in there for a while?
Yeah. Was Buck, Grandpa, myself, and Kenny Price.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
That he sang bass.
Oh.
And that was the four of us, and then I played guitar. Oh. Was the only instrument.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so successful that they went in and produced some albums. I think they did like four.
Oh, wow.
Number one, two, three, and four. Could have been more. Gospel hee-haw songs from the show, and very successful.
Oh, you all did it right. You did it right. You did it exactly the right way. And as I mentioned to you off the air, Kenny Price is just from right over the road here from where I live and grew up whole life. And he was a legend in Boone County, Kentucky. He was the sheriff of Boone County.
Yes,
for a while. He had that hit, but boy, he had that voice that if you needed that bottom filled out, It was hold on to the rafters because he could make them shake just with that vibration. It was a great set. Tom, so that's a neat. I know I was wondering how that came about. So now you've answered that question for me.
Yeah, Kenny is one of my very favorite people. If you met him, you had to like him.
Oh
right
yeah,
now.
He yeah.
Just was a joy to be around.
Nice guy.
Another thing about that whole cast is I can't recall an argument. But the 28 years that we were on, that just everybody seemed to know that if we disrupted what was happening, that we'd lose the magic or whatever.
Mm.
So we just didn't do it. No, you didn't raise your voice.
Isn't that something?
If something had to be fixed, they would fix it, and we'd go on with our show.
Isn't that something? That's got to be a big part of why it was so successful, as everybody wanted it to be.
Exactly.
And set your ego aside and let's make it work. What a great story that whole thing is, and the different combinations that came through and played on that stage that you were involved in, and it was just magic. It was magic stuff, and I think if people realize that it was only 2 years on CBS, I still think their jaw drops when they realize that the second time. It's just amazing. It's just amazing. You know, I dearly love Paraphys with you and Buck. It gave me a chance to hear a lot of great bluegrass music that I wanted to learn, banjo stuff. And if I put that on one side, Roy, of the bookshelf, which would be a really long bookshelf, my own personal thing on the very other end would be an album that you did with, I think, the greatest jazz guitar player ever, Joe Pass.
Oh, that was a highlight of my life, because when we first started talking about it several years ago, I mean, it would just come up every now and then, but not constant, because I was a little shy. I said, you're talking about a guitarist now,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to a guitar player. And we walked in the studio, him turning out to be exactly the way I hoped he would be. He walked in, set his guitar down, and shook my hand and says, "What do you want to play?" And I said, "Well, how about just finishing this handshake and check the tune in?" He hit an E string, and then he talked to the booth, and he said, "Turn the machine on."
Is that right?
Yeah.
Well, but the album that I have is all Hank Williams stuff. Is that what was that your intention when you went in, or did you just wind up doing a lot of that?
It was. It was Joe's idea. He came up with that Joe Pass and Roy Clark play Hank Williams.
Mm-hmm.
So every tune in the album is Hank Williams. It's getting to where there's so many Hanks around.
No, you're right. It was Hank Williams. You're right. And it's a great album. I told you, I may have told you off the air, I do a jazz program on a radio show in Cincinnati, not this program, but and every time I play something than that, I always say this is Joe Pass and Roy Clark, and I get phone calls. They're saying, "Now, who was Joe and who?" I said, "It's Roy Clark."
Yeah.
They can't believe it.
Well, I tell you what, that's...
You nailed it.
Well, some things in there that, you know, we couldn't have sat down and written out any other way. He would just, I said, "How are we going to start it?" He said, "Well, I'll just nod my head and back my foot for the rhythm. And then you start it off and you play until you feel comfortable. And then nod and look at me and I'll play." And that's the way it was put together.
Oh, it's great. You absolutely nailed it. It's a great album. I mean, it's got to be. I'm glad that you hold that in as high regard as I do. You're not just playing up to me because you don't have to do that. But to me, that's a remarkable thing for your career to have that in the middle of everything else that you've done, which is an amazing amount. But to have the thing with Joe Pass, who I really do believe, if there was a better jazz guitar player and the chords that he played and the changes that he made were so smooth and so beautiful, I don't know that there was another guy like him.
One of the things that really tickled me and made me feel good, somebody asked Joe, said, "Well, Joe, how are we going to tell which one of you is playing?" He said, "The tone we use."
Oh, okay. Yeah, not the notes, the tone.
Yeah,
okay. Wow, that was great. It's well, what a great... I'm having so much fun, Roy. If you just tuned in, I'm talking to Roy Clark. You've given me a lot of time. I appreciate this so much. And
bless your heart. I appreciate you.
Oh man, what a wonderful event for me to get to do this. I know, your career continued. You were like one of the first. Were you like one of the first people to go to Branson and set up shop there?
Oh wow.
Do you remember? I know you went out there early on, and there was a theater out there, and of course there were others out there, but you had a nice long time at the Branson Theater that you played at, didn't you?
Well, the thing about life is I really have enjoyed it.
Yes, thank you.
And there's something good everywhere you go. Now you can find the bad, but just. Do something nice for someone.
There you go.
It doesn't take all that much. You can just smile.
Just smiling. That's it, man. Just smiling.
It'll make their day and it'll make yours too.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And the same thing in music. With because Joe Pass was such a good man, that being around him took away all that fear from my side. Because he was such an incredible...
There you go.
He knew that I was... not in my ballpark totally, so he just eased up and let it happen.
Wow.
I could feel him doing that. I could feel him just being easy, but he did it so smooth, which is the difference between good and great.
That's right.
You can be a good guitar player or you can be a great guitar player.
And you can be a great guitar player and be gracious also, and that's what Joe was.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, that's
you know, he's the only one that played music in his family.
Really? I did not know that.
I asked him if he had a brother or something. He said, "Nope, I'm it. I'm the only one."
Well, he must.
Mother's side is daddy's side.
He took the all both sides of all generations and used it all up for him, I guess.
Yeah.
Oh, well, this has been. Roy, were you working on a book? Did I see that? Did you get the book finished, or are we still in a biography stage here, or am I just misreading something?
Working on a book?
Yes, sir. Were you?
Was I?
Yes, sir.
Oh, I'm sorry. I have the one out.
Oh, okay. All right. Tell me about that one then I misread.
It's called My Life in Spite of Myself.
Okay.
It's just a. I say just, it's a nice book. It turned out good.
Okay.
And it just really goes from birth to where we are today.
Which is very much alive and very vital, and you're still, this is just remarkable. It's like I've just seen you for the first time in black and white, and now all these years forward, everything fits together so well, and I have this great chance to talk to Roy Clark on the phone. This has just been a wonderful.
It's been a pleasure to talk to you.
Well, man, I appreciate that, Roy. You mean so much to this country and the music in general and all the stuff that you did and the comedy. And I don't know that anyone, when they hear the name Roy Clark, it doesn't just smile. It's a wonderful thing you've done.
Well, I am just so appreciative that I'll just smile and say thank you.
Thank you, sir. All right, listen, I'm gonna let you get back to your busy day. I've taken up enough of your time, and man, Roy Clark, this has been a dream come true to get to chat with you about some of those records I have and what you've accomplished, which we could do this for days, and I would barely scratch the surface. But Roy, from the bottom of my heart, if my dad, my grandpa, my great grandpa was around, they would be tickled pink to know that I'm talking to Roy Clark, as you touched all of them, my friend.
You're a fine gentleman, Steve.
Thank you, sir. Thanks so much, Roy Clark, for stopping by. You take care. I really appreciate that a lot. Thank you so much, and I will hopefully talk to you again someday. We'll see you down the road then.
You got it.
All right, bud. Thanks, man.
Thank you, babe.
Bye. How much fun was that, getting to chat with Roy Clark? Now, thank you so much for tuning in. Without you, I wouldn't have had a chance to talk to Roy Clark. Maybe it's not that big of a deal to you, but I think you enjoyed the information there. Who would have thought 2.5 years on CBS? Well, yes, he all ran for 27, 28 years. CBS didn't want it because they didn't want that kind of music. They wanted to, I don't know what they were trying to think about doing, but they had a show that had high ratings, but chose artistically to get rid of Hee Haw and what it represented as far as the music and all the different stars that came through there. And they just took that down the road and made a much bigger success of it. Now, one of my favorite quotes from Roy, as you could tell, he was very happy with having recorded with Joe Pass. When you can look up Joe Pass on your computer whenever you want. Still, to me, one of the best all-time jazz guitar players, best all-time guitar players. He said, now there's a difference between a guitarist and a guitar player, and of course he felt that Joe was a guitarist. I'll tell you this, Roy Clark was a guitarist. He's the real deal, and wow, what a lucky event. Thanks so much for allowing me to share that moment with you. He was the real guy.